Chris Sale and Blake Snell had the pitcher's duel of the season last night. Let's talk about it. This is First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch. Your home, talking about all things Major League Baseball. What happened yesterday across the league? I'm Lindsey Crosby, joined as always by Christian Rau, managing editor of InsideTheCardinals.com. And if you were up late last night, which I really hope you were, you saw the best pitching matchup of the season by far in Chris Sale of the Atlanta Braves taking on Blake Snell of the San Francisco Giants. It was a 1-0 win for the Braves in 10 innings, so neither man got a decision, but that's not for lack of trying. Let me just kind of real quick, Christian, tell you some of the amazing stats that came out of this, right? So Blake Snell, who threw a no-hitter two outings ago in Cincinnati against the Reds in Great American Small Park, he has a no-hitter going through six innings, ends up going 6 1/3, two hits, obviously no runs allowed, 11 strikeouts to three walks. Chris Sale turns right around and matches him. The first two batters reach, one on a hit, one on an error. Chris Sale then retires 20 straight batters, gives up a two-out single in his final inning, traded that guy via pop-out. He goes 7 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 12 strikeouts, and no walks on 107 pitches. Those combined, where is it here? I had the number. Those combined strikeouts, it was 23 strikeouts. That combined 23 strikeouts is the most by two starters in Oracle Park history. That ballpark's been around since 2000, so 24 years. I guess here's my initial question off of that game. We both watched that game. You had the takeaways for Braves today on that. Was that the best game of the season so far?
Yes, absolutely. That was, at least in my mind, if you like pitching duels, then 100%. But I think even if you just like baseball, period, then that was the game that you need to watch. So if you have MLB TV, that's one that's worth going back, watching at least the condensed game. Yeah. Give yourself that 10 minutes to go check out, or go on YouTube. If you don't have MLB TV, they have it on there. You just got to watch the ads. But yeah, so many fun things that happened in that game. Worth the bags under my eyes today, Lindsey. And I will say, I'll add even one more thing to that. You said it was the first time in Oracle Park they did those things. Sarah Langs put out a great tweet, another great Sarah Langs tweet. Blake Snell and Chris Sale are the fourth pair of pitchers to each have more than 10 strikeouts and allow three hits or fewer in the same game. They're actually the only duo of those four pairs to allow zero runs. So they did lots of huge historic things. You talk about 23 strikeouts between the two of them. In the entire game, 33 strikeouts. It was a pitching duel even when the bullpens came out. Jeez. Braves bullpen had some nice bounce backs after a dreadful series in Colorado. It was just an all-around good game. The winning run came from pinch hit Travis d'Arnaud, which it was a sacrifice fly that Mike Yastrzemski made a brilliant catch on. So to the final plays, it was just a really good baseball game. It had me on the edge of my seat. And that wasn't for the fact that I was caffeinated, highly, highly caffeinated at 10 o'clock in the evening. It was because it was just a very good baseball game. As you take a sip of the nectar of the gods, I get it.
I need more coffee. Yeah. I mean, it was, the point of the bullpen was really interesting too. Like Raisel Iglesias, the closer for Atlanta, comes out for the ninth to get the game into extras. He doesn't throw a lot of pitches. So he comes back out for the 10th and gets the save. He's done that once before, kind of the same situation. They were in Arizona. He pitched the ninth. He came back out for the 10th. And in the 10th, an unearned run scored. That ghost runner scored from second. That Manfred man scored from second. And I think that game actually went on to the 11th inning before that game ended. This one, I want to say he struck out four of the six batters he faced, something like that. He got like three or four strikeouts in those two innings. Didn't get a save technically, but he got the win. So yeah, it's just weird how that works. You can't get both the win and the save, but he got the win there. The one issue I kind of think we have to talk about here, and it's frustrating that we have to discuss this, Well, one, I just don't want to move off this game yet. It was a great game. CB Buckner behind the plate. We have a group chat. You called it as soon as the game started. You said, "Wait, I have to do a CB Buckner game. That's going to be the story of the game." It wasn't the story of the game, but CB Buckner did not have a very consistent strike zone. You saw both teams getting mad about it. Both broadcast crews got mad about it. I clicked over and heard a little bit of the San Francisco one. They were as mad as the Braves one was. So the official umpire scorecard, I say official, the Twitter account ump scorecards, it's not out yet. But last night's similar kind of thing, you know, pulling the automated data to kind of grade it out, gave CB Buckner an 85% accuracy.
Oof.
Out of 151 calls, he only made 129 of them. And if you like pitches that were up and away from righties, pitches that were up and in to righties, pitches that were down and away to righties were all areas he struggled with. He was calling everything that was up and off the plate a strike. He was calling everything that was down and away from a righty a ball, whether it was in the zone or not. And here's the most telling point thing to me about this. On pitches that were more than 1 inch away from the zone, either in or out, he had a 90% accuracy. So one out of every 10 pitches that was more than an inch out of the zone, he missed. The final count, 16 of those calls went in San Francisco's favor. 6 went in Atlanta's favor of all of the missed calls. But one, it's just frustrating that we have to deal with egregiously bad umpiring. Two things can be true at once. Umpiring has never been as good as it is as a whole. But the mistakes seem to be as egregious as they've ever been because we have more information and more data to see what the call should have been. Is it beyond time for MLB to use the challenge system that is in AAA and works amazingly? Is it about to, it, like, are we past the point where that's got to happen?
Yes. Yes, we are beyond the point. I think it's exactly what you said. It's because we have all that data now that is easily accessible to your average Joe sitting on Twitter X and can see every single thing on MLB game day that, hey, there was 4 pitches on this at bat from Chris Sale. 2 of them were called balls. 2 of them were called strikes. All of them should have been strikes. You know, so like it's definitely something that needs to be fixed. I was a huge advocate of keeping the umpires in the game. I liked that small amount, and let me go ahead and say small amount of human error. But it's just egregiously changed in my mind, and it's probably because of the fact that we have more data. It's probably not changed as much as I think it has. It's just the fact that now we can see, okay, these issues are happening. It probably was worse 10 years ago, but no, I agree with you. CB Buckner, I hate that I called that at the beginning of the game, saying, you know, why did you do this to me? You know, shout out Noah. I can't believe that happened. I do want to say one more thing about this topic before we move on. Again, game of the night, game of the year so far. Go ahead, Look back at it. Blake Snell was fantastic, a no-hitter into the sixth inning. But as great as Blake Snell was, with his 114 pitches, and hey, let's go ahead and give another nod because he did go a pretty long distance. That's two stops in the last 3 that he's done that. That's something that he's had a narrative on his entire career that he doesn't go this long in length. But as great as Snell's pitching performance was, Sale beat him out. Sale outlasted him with those 7 innings pitched, with those 12 Ks, no walks. I think that he had a game score, one of those funny stats that we like to look at, of an 83, which is really impressive. I think that was, if I remember, I did a piece for the Braves today at the All-Star break, and there was no other pitching matchups for the Braves that had an 83. So I think that is the best pitching performance in the eyes of game score for the Braves this season so far, which makes perfect sense. It was a great outing. Sale is on his way to being the National League's young Lindsay. I think there's no doubt about that right now.
Yeah. A lot of the stats off of this game and the comparisons to his past performances are all, he hasn't done this since 2018, 2019. And that was the prime of one of the best pitchers in baseball, Chris Sale, right? The guy who was perpetually the runner-up for the Cy Young to somebody else. I want to say he had five consecutive, you know, top three finishes in Cy Young and never won it. It feels like if nothing changes, this is finally the year where Chris Sale will get his Cy Young and Chris Sale will, you know, kind of get that monkey off his back. But amazing game. Absolutely just loved it. Again, Christian said it earlier, if you have a chance to go watch the condensed game on MLB.tv or even to go onto YouTube and watch the highlight package that MLB does for these games, it's totally worth it. Amazing 100%. Game, especially if you love pitching. Going from there, we're going to stay out west for a second. San Francisco Dodgers activated Mookie Betts. So Mookie Betts is back. He is playing right field. They've said that they're going to use him in the outfield versus using him at shortstop or second base. And kind of an interesting decision here, right? He mentioned last year he wanted to move into the infield. They put him at second base. They moved him out of necessity to shortstop at spring training. Offensively, he was fine. Defensively, not so much. He comes back. They say, you are in the outfield. He goes 2-for-4, hits a homer, scores a run, 3 RBI. In the Dodgers 5-2 victory. But to make room on the roster for Mookie Betts, one of the guys that they got to fill in at shortstop, Amed Rosario, was DFA'd. And it's a odd decision to me to DFA the Braves DFA'd Eddie Rosario. Amed Rosario. If your name is Rosario, you have lost jobs this week.
It's a bad week for you.
It's a bad week for you. So 287 plate appearances for Amed Rosario between Tampa Bay and LA. 305 batting average. 2 homers, 10 stolen bases. I know he's not great defensively. He's got plenty of speed. He's got good arm strength. He can fill in at multiple positions, infield and outfield. Why would you DFA Amed Rosario to make room for Mookie Betts?
Maybe he's a ghost hunter. Maybe that's the case because Mookie Betts doesn't like ghosts. We saw that with his, you know, second straight year declining to stay in the same hotel as the team did when they went to Milwaukee. He had his own Airbnb because of that. So I don't know. And that's not the reason. I really don't know the reason. You know, 2 weeks you have this player that, as you mentioned, has hit over 300 on the season. Shortstop has been a huge concern. Yes, you're getting Tommy Edman back soon. So you brought in two shortstops. So you knew there was going to be some sort of platoon thing. When we were talking about winners and losers, sleepers, snoozers at the trade deadline, Lindsay, I said that this was the winning package. And I put the two together, Rosario and Edman, because of the fact that you can platoon them or whatever you need to do and then easily move Mookie Betts back to the outfield without an issue. Yeah. Now, I think that I think that's what that's showing is maybe they just believe that Tommy Edmonds is the guy that can just be the everydayer. I don't know if that's the case or if they think Gavin Lux can push a little farther, but I think that's not the case because I think he's going to sit at second. Mm-hmm. So this is a huge head scratcher. In my mind, though, who would you have DFA'd instead to bring Mookie Betts back? Because I think the Dodgers are going to be, this is not going to be the first tough decision they have to bring back some roster moves.
Yeah, I mean, right now, your outfielders, Mookie, obviously, Teoscar Hernandez, Jason Hayward, Kevin Kiermaier, Andy Pahes. But your infield is really where you're stuck. They grabbed Nick Ahmed when he was DFA'd for shortstop. They have him as well. Ahmed, Freeman, Kike Hernandez, Gavin Lux, Miguel Rojas. That's the hard part, right? Is like you have to carry a backup catcher. You've got Austin Barnes on the roster. So you've got three spots to use. And it just, I have to wonder, Is Kike Hernandez just that much better in the clubhouse? Is it maybe a clubhouse thing? Because from a baseball perspective, it feels like Kike Hernandez may have been the guy. Chris Taylor, he's on the IL. So, you know, that probably wouldn't help there. But Chris Taylor, not a guy that has really contributed this year. A little bit, you know, older veteran who's arguably past his prime. It probably would have come, I'm guessing Rojas is a clubhouse leader. I know he talked a lot, I think it was on the Chris Rose rotation, about helping Mookie Betts defensively, being a kind of a teacher and a leader in the infield and helping him out with learning shortstop. So I guess when you word it that way, there's not a lot of obvious choices, but it just seems odd, right? To to DFA a guy batting over 300. I don't think I've seen a guy batting over 300 get DFA. Now, he was on a slump with the Dodgers. He wasn't hitting the same with the Dodgers as he was with the Rays, but still, just odd decision on its face. But like you said, who else really was the option unless you maybe moved on from Nick Ahmed, who's been doing a lot of the starts at shortstop?
Yeah, it sounds like this is not going to be the last time we have a head-scratching moment with the Dodgers, really probably in the month of August, because we still have to get Tommy Edman on the team. We still have to get Max Muncy back on the team, who are both rehabbing right now. And just those two alone are going to be, I think, are going to cause some...
roster moves. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have the possibility of bringing back, you know, a couple players on the injured list, which we'll talk about later on in the show. So, yeah, I think the Dodgers have some really tough decisions to make, but that's what you get when you build your team around really superstar players. You're going to have tough decisions, especially when you get down to August and September. But that's, I guess, that's what champions make, right? They did in 2020.
Talking about building your roster around injured players and having injured players, the Yankees got destroyed by the Chicago White Sox yesterday, 12-2. Luis Gil, who we thought could have been a starter at the All-Star game, had a 2.03 ERA in mid-June, has a 5.62 since then. He got blown up. Four innings, seven hits, four runs, two walks to three strikeouts. But the worst news out of this, Jazz Chisholm has an arm injury. He's going to get an MRI. They've said it's an elbow. They don't know what it is. Obviously, that is scary. If it is, you know, if it is something like Tommy John surgery, he could rehab and be back in time for next season. But obviously, we talked, I think it was just yesterday, about how, like, you needed more offense on this team around Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. And I thought Jazz was a big part of that, even potentially moving into the leadoff spot. They are half a game behind the Orioles. They are 4.5 up in the wild card. I think they're going to make the postseason, right? Like, it feels pretty safe that they're going to make the postseason. But is that enough to save Aaron Boone's job? Because the Yankees expect wins. The Yankees expect championships. The Yankees haven't won one in a long time, and Aaron Boone's been the manager for most of that. How far do they have to go in the postseason for Aaron Boone to be comfortable and not have to worry about his job?
I mean, is this the same song and same dance right now? How many years have we been saying that? I think we've had this conversation across just baseball for, dare I say, 5 years. I feel like it's been a very long time where we've had the conversation over and over again. Like, is Aaron Boone on the hot seat? However, I do think that this year it's a little warmer than normal. And I do think because of all the added additions that they've had, now there are some injury concerns. Rizzo, Stanton just coming back. Now you have Jazz Chisholm. You only had Garrett Cole for half a season. So I do think that there's a little bit of things that are helping him, if you want to call that, about, you know, it's not all his fault. However, good managers find ways to win with injuries, because guess what? Every other team has injuries. So do I think Aaron Boone's on the hot seat? If he's not, because I think he's absolutely loved in the Yankees community, at least the Yankees front office. If he's not, that's why. But I think if I'm Brian Cashman, I think he absolutely needs to be. I think you have to at least win one playoff series. At the very minimum, you have to win at least one. You have to either get yourself to the ALCS if you win the division, or you have to at least get to the next round if you are a wild card team. I think that's the absolute minimum, Lindsay. But when you look at this Jazz Chisholm injury, that is one of the glaring issues they've had all season long. That's why they moved Jazz Chisholm to third base for the first time in his career. They put him in third base because they thought he could play that position, which he was doing quite well at. But now that Jazz is injured, who do they go back to now? Now they have to go back to DJ LeMahieu, who has not been great with the bat. So I think now you're just running into another issue that you cannot improve unless for some reason Ahmed Rosario falls into your lap in waivers and you've put him at third base. I don't know if that's the case, but you know,
he's played it some.
It's true, right? It's I guess it's doable, and that would help with the bat portion. I just don't think he's falling that far personally, but I don't know. I think that there's a lot more issues right now to worry about than if Aaron Boone's on the hot seat personally, but I do think that that's going to be a a concern moving forward. It's going to be a huge question, especially if they don't win a playoff game. If they get swept, I think you have to get rid of them the day after. Like, I think it's that important. But if they don't win a playoff series, I think it's up in the air, personally.
I think if you see Aaron Boone gone, it's because Skip Shoemaker is out there. Signed with the Marlins.
Interesting.
Yes, but he asked them in the offseason or early in the year to remove the club option from his contract, and they agreed to do so. So it sounds like they are planning on him hitting free agency. And if I remember right, he's won manager of the year somewhat recently. He took that Marlins team to the playoffs last year, right? Yeah. The issues they've had this year have not been his fault. He's been considered to have managed it pretty well. I would go on a limb to say if they fire him, it is to make a move for Skip because they want to bring in a fresh face. They want to bring in somebody new. So I don't know if he'll get fired or not, but if he does, I think that's why.
Wait, you don't think it's Joe Girardi for the... I like that Skip Shoemaker idea. I think that'd be a good fit because I do agree. I think he's a great manager. I think he's just was dealt a bad hand with the Peter Bendick situation in Miami. I agree.
Yeah. All right. Looking at quick pitch here, a couple quick things we want to get to. First one, minor league call-up, Junior Caminero. People who listen to my old podcast, Locked On MLB Prospects, know he is one of my favorite prospects in all of baseball. Legitimately has some of the best power in all of baseball. And I don't mean that in a hyperbolic way. I don't mean that like in the minors. His 90th percentile exit velocity is in the same realm as your Ronald Acuña Jr., as your Shohei Ohtani, as your Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. He can absolutely crush baseballs. I had the privilege last year of calling a week of his games late in the season in AA Montgomery. They swept the Chattanooga Lookouts, AA the Cincinnati Reds in that series, and he hit multiple home runs, flashed the glove defensively at third base, and just was a stud for a week. Is this addition by subtraction, trading Isak Paredes, but getting Junior Caminero in his place? Is this somehow an upgrade over a 2023 All-Star and Paredes?
I'm never going to doubt the Tampa Bay Rays master plan, especially when it comes to prospects, because they do it right. They have done it right for a very long time under Kevin Cash and under this front office. So I'm not going to doubt them. So I'm going to say yes. I think they have a lot of great prospects coming up, and Caminero just being one of them. He only got 7 games last year in 2023. But as you mentioned, Lindsay, when you talk about his exit velocities, that's just super impressive the way he hits the ball. His max EVs, if you take all of the minor leagues and the major leagues for the Tampa Bay Rays, the entire organization, take 10 hard-hittest balls in the entire organization, he has 6 of them already. So, I mean, that's just insane. So, and as of right now, I should say, he has 6 of them.
And that's with him only playing, I think, 53 games in the minors because of a quad injury earlier in the year.
Right. And you mentioned he's playing third base, right? Here's my question. You've paid attention to him a lot more than I. Is he stick at third base, or do we eventually see him maybe move to like a corner outfielder or a first base position? Is he slotted to be an everyday third baseman, you think?
I think he's good enough to play third base. They actually, at the major league level, had him fill in at shortstop for a game or two down the stretch last year. Not everybody agrees with me. Several prospect evaluators have said they don't think he can stick defensively at third. I think he's good enough to stick at third and could get by for a game or finish up a game for you at shortstop if you have an injury. I do wonder if, given the distribution of their prospects and their hitters, if they maybe decide to move him to, say, right field. His arm is strong enough for right field. And I do think Baseball America, maybe it was last year, when they did that future roster look thing that they do where they project out 5 years in the future, I think they had him in right field, but I think that's because they were assuming Paredes was still at third base for the Rays. I think he can stick at third. And not only that, I think he can be an above average defender at third base, which is kind of outside of the industry perception of him. But again, having talked to him, having watched him for a week in person and just watching what he did on every single play, I think he can do it.
He's a prime reason why if the Tampa Bay Rays go and make a trade and they just say, oh, just give me that Dominican summer league guy from, you know, just that little small minor league guy. No, don't worry about him. We'll just take him. Just know that that's probably going to be a perennial all-star in the future, because that's exactly how they got him. They got him to clear a 40-man roster spot right before the Rule 5 draft of the Cleveland Guardians for a pitcher, which might have mentioned the pitcher they gave up was quite good too. But I'm very excited to see what Caminero's got.
Yeah. Talking about seeing what a guy has, the Mariners took a flyer on Victor Robles, former top prospect in baseball, was DFA'd by the Nationals after a disappointing year this year. And 73 days later, he has signed a 2-year extension with the Seattle Mariners. Batting 303, 372, 450, 3 homers, 12 stolen bases in those 42 games. He's played all 3 outfield positions. And the deal, 2 years, $9.75 million, another $9 million club option in 2027, and there is $1 million in bonuses in each season based on plate appearances, 500 and 600 plate appearances. So is this kind of the most surprising extension of the year so far?
Yes, by far it's most surprising, because look where he's doing it too. He's doing it in Seattle at T-Mobile Park, which is, I think if you go to Park Factors right now, I think it's towards the bottom. It's either the last or the second to last in all of Park Factor for hitters. So, I mean, he's reviving his career in one of the toughest places to do it. So I think it's easily the most surprising extension all season long. I really like seeing what Robles is doing here, though. I enjoyed watching him with Washington. This seems like the perfect scenario for a change of scenery, if you will. I think they just needed to happen. There was a lot of young outfielders in the Washington system coming up. So I think they gave Victor Robles enough chances to do what he needed to do in Washington. Let's say that. I think that his time just expired there and it's time for him to move on. I don't think there was any ill will there. I'll go on record to say I really like what Washington's doing with their team. I think you know what Mike Rizzo's doing with their squad. I think in the next season we're going to see them be in more of the conversation with the NL East. But how cool is this to see a guy who was with the Nationals his entire career, had a lot of high prestige, a lot of people thought he was going to be this very good player. It never worked out. He goes to a new squad in Seattle and it's finally starting to show. He starts to get an extension. So I love seeing this for the guy.
Yeah, I will throw out lots of injuries while he was in Washington. He had a lumbar strain. He had back spasms. He had a hamstring strain. A lot of issues. But also, despite that, I think it was 2020 through 2022, 965 plate appearances. He batted .216. So something where he never seemed to really get his footing because of the health issues. He batted .299 last year, but in like 36 games before he was out for injury. So change of scenery, I think, did him well. It's unfortunate Washington didn't get anything for him, but I'm happy for him. And hopefully, I don't think this money is enough where if this deal goes bad, it hampers Seattle. So it kind of feels like a win-win for both Seattle and Victor Robles. And now, something that I've talked a lot about that I kind of feel strongly about is you can take Julio Rodriguez and not play him in center field if you want to. You can 100%. Save the wear and tear on his legs, because I don't think we necessarily talk enough about how much playing center field on an everyday basis can wear on your body physically. I was hesitant to say it was a good idea for Aaron Judge to move to center in his 30s, especially at his size. I think Mike Trout should have been moved to right field already. And I think that Julio Rodriguez, having had some health issues this year, I do think that maybe him not playing center field every single day would be a good thing.
I was going to say CC Mike Trout. Yeah, absolutely. So, yep.
Real quick, wrapping up the show here. This or that, what is the most impressive start since the All-Star break? The Royals going 13-9 or the A's going 13-8?
I didn't expect the A's even be in this conversation. So give me the Oakland A's. What they've done after the All-Star break, they didn't sell at the deadline too hard. Give me the Oakland A's. I think that's really impressive.
Yeah, same here. Zach Gelof is looking like he might be an answer at second base. Shea Langelier is behind the plate. You have a young little core you're developing here. I think it's pretty interesting, and it's pretty surprising that they've been able to be one of the better offenses in the second half. This has been First Pitch for Tuesday, August 13th. If you're listening on audio, subscribe to the show. If you're on YouTube, leave us a leave a comment on the show. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you watch. Does mean a ton. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.